like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it's sink or swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. Welcome to the shrimp tank, word to Chris Hanks. Before to put it all together, this is big thanks. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, well homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016, like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a general from the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never going hard as ever. The results match the effort.
Hey, everybody, good afternoon, and welcome to the Shrimp Tank, brought to you every week right here live, Tuesday from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. We'll talk about our new times that'll be coming up soon, right here in Atlanta Business Radio X in Sandy Springs, where we interview the brightest and best business owners every week here in the state of Georgia, all in and around Atlanta, about how to start, grow, run, and create a successful business. Now, the Shrimp Tank also brings you some live pitches, new business ideas from young entrepreneurs, the future entrepreneurs of tomorrow from Kennesaw State and other schools around the state of Georgia, in front of our panel of business owners to see whether their business will swim or sink in the tank. Every week I'm joined, well, not every week, just in the past couple of weeks, I'm back here with Chris Hanks, who is the executive director and founder at the KSU, now the Shore Center for Entrepreneurship. And Chris, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been a little bit too long.
Now, what's going on at KSU?
See, you want to know the scoop? So many things have been going on that's been keeping me away from the tank.
Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. But no, the most compelling since the last time I was in the seat was we took 50 of the best educators in the world who are committed to transforming youth through entrepreneurship. Spent a week together sharing best practices and, you know, teaching each other sort of what are the best tools we can get to let students experience entrepreneurship.
Really? And so what came out of the conference? Were there any top, you know, sort of nuggets of gold or things like that that came out?
Absolutely.
This is what the kids need to learn about entrepreneurship to grow successful businesses?
Yeah, we had a lot of takeaways like that. And what was really compelling too, since we take 50 from different places of the world, we had like, for example, a school in Cherokee County now going to be working with a school in Honduras and having students from each work with each other.
No kidding.
And then some students who are producing things like basil will be sold at other schools. And so we've got some school-based enterprises working together cross-culturally.
That's
so
fantastic.
All kinds of just really, really great stuff. And it's really neat to get together with people who believe that, you know, entrepreneurship, that the experience of entrepreneurship is something special. You know, when you get kids to experience entrepreneurship as opposed to what can we make them memorize, just phenomenal things can happen.
That's fantastic. And for those of you that don't know this, I mean, the KSU Center of Entrepreneurship, which was founded by Chris, it's blowing up like crazy. You know, the kids of tomorrow, as we know in high schools today, what do they learn? They learn how to take tests. They learn how to say, hey, what college are you going to get into? And it's good to go to college. But nobody today really talks to those kids about growing and becoming an entrepreneur. And let's face it, they say that unemployment right now is at 4.9%. Apparently, the government can't do math, because what they do is they lop off people after about 18 months and say, well, if you haven't found a job, we just don't include you in the unemployment number. So I don't know what you call those people, broke, homeless. You call them people that are sitting and doing nothing. But these kids of tomorrow are the ones that are going to start the businesses and create the jobs. It will not be the Fortune 500 companies. And aren't you talking to kids about creating that future?
Absolutely. And the number of students that will be self-employed at some point in their lifetime, right now, estimates are right around 40%.
Is that true?
So
is that just a Gen Y?
Kids, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Because if you think about the pressure on and the increased cost of hiring, so the pressure on companies to sort of outsource and 1099 and those kinds of things, let alone the demand for entrepreneurship and the barriers to entrepreneurship being reduced. So more and more students are being forced to think entrepreneurially. If you think about the different changes, the number of jobs that these students will have in the future, as opposed to, you know, maybe our generation, where it was more likely to stick with one or two employers for a longer period of time. These students don't have that luxury. So therefore, they have to think of themselves as a brand, and they're an entrepreneur regardless of who employs them.
Well, we'll have on our guest in just a minute, Kevin Peek, who's the owner of Kaja Popcorn. I think what's interesting about this conversation is that it becomes clear to me all the time that when I watch the government operate, that apparently they believe that they always know better than free market enterprise. I noticed this recently when I took a trip down to Savannah. Family was driving the car and we stopped off at the restroom at McDonald's. And we went to McDonald's. I noticed at one time that when you walked into a McDonald's, there were five or six places to order your food. This particular McDonald's in Savannah only had two places to order food and had two machines where you could order food. So here was the bright idea of the government, Chris, what they basically said, because they don't understand entrepreneurship. Clearly, they do not understand entrepreneurship. They said, we need to raise minimum wage. By the way, the big company said, you do that. And when we do, see those six jobs that were here? Now there's two of them.
Yeah.
Congratulations. We have two people making a lot more money and four more people that are out of work. There's the government at work for you right there, right? That's entrepreneurship at its best.
Yep. Yeah. And the amount of opportunity, like, you know, I love the fact that entrepreneurship represents opportunity as opposed to a victim type of mindset, right? So, you know, I'm willing to sacrifice my today to build a better tomorrow. And I don't have to be a victim of circumstances. I can find opportunities in those events that I am laid off from someplace like a McDonald's.
I'm curious on one more topic to talk. We're talking about entrepreneurship. You know, this last week or so, there's been this evolution of NBA signing free agents all over the place. I mean, even if you're not a basketball fan, you hear about it. And apparently the NFL players are really pissed off, and they're pissed off at how much money the NBA players are making today. And so even within entrepreneurship, if you look at the way that the leagues have marketed themselves, the NHL, which nobody cares about hockey anymore. I'm sorry, hockey fans, but let's be honest. If you can name me five hockey players right now, I'll give you $100.
So much for our Canadian listeners.
Yeah. Whatever it may be, even in Canada right now, I bet you they can't name all the players. They've done nothing to market the league. They really haven't. It's not near as popular as it used to be. The NFL is clearly trying, and they've got contracts. Major League Baseball, again, I don't know if I can name five players anymore. I look at all my old baseball cards. I used to know them all. But the NBA has done a phenomenal job of marketing. And now you're seeing these record contracts that have come out where even almost the bad basketball players off the bench get $10 or $15 million a year. How do you think that they've done it? How's the NBA done this unbelievable job of being an entrepreneur?
Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I think that, but if you think about that unbelievable amount of money that these people are signing contracts for, but think about that return on investment for the franchise, just selling the jerseys
themselves
with that number on their back, right? How many kids are going to buy that number? And if you think about the amount of money that these individuals represent at being, 18, 24 years old, you know, that's just crazy.
And we signed Dwight Howard here in Atlanta. What does that mean for us? Not much. I'm going to say it. I know nobody wants to hear it, but Dwight Howard's not a winner. He hasn't won. He hasn't won anywhere right now. And so we gave away Al Horford. We didn't give him away. The Celtics took him and we lost Jeff Teague. I don't know. We could be in big trouble this year. So you're going to see a great job. I know all the people down at the Hawks and they're going to do a great job marketing that. I guarantee you they fill the stadium. Hopefully Dwight Howard will play well. But I just thought it was pretty interesting stuff. When you see these kind of contracts are out there, this is what, you know, being an entrepreneur is all about. You know, whether you own a big business or a small business, if you can figure out a way to market it and market it right, and you put a good product that's out there, you can end up generating a lot of money. I don't know how the fans are going to afford the tickets, but it'll be amazing stuff. So today we're bringing you a friend of mine and a very successful business owner. I've actually been a customer of his for a long time now, and I think that he happens to make the best popcorn in the city. It's Kevin Peek, who owns Kaja Popcorn. And by the way, I'd start with this by saying, whether or not you're a lover of popcorn, I'm thinking that there are two kinds of popcorn you probably have not tried before. If you live in the South, you might have tried it, but definitely not anywhere else. One is the special pimento cheese, which I want to talk about today. And then there's also the spicy barbecue. These are two, not that the caramel corn is not unbelievable, but these two flavors are truly unbelievable. So I wanted to bring Kevin on and just tell me, how does one actually decide to get into the popcorn business? When do you wake up one day and say, I want to make popcorn?
Yeah, it's a great that's a great question. People ask me that all the time. How did you get started in popcorn? I didn't grow up with it. Grew up in Arkansas. Popcorn wasn't prevalent in my household because it wasn't fried. So it's interesting. In the South, we still get that question. Like, oh my gosh, you know, a popcorn store. How can you do that? But my wife was traveling, and I traveled a lot in the corporate world in my prior life. I said, gosh, you know, we don't have any really great popcorn in Atlanta.
So
and
true.
To make it and make it fresh. Happened to be an investor in a restaurant, and the chef and I were just goofing around, you know, shooting the breeze one day. And I said, gosh, you know, wouldn't this be interesting? And he said, yeah, I'd love to help you, you know, come up with that concept. And sort of the rest is history. And the flavors sort of, he generated the flavors for me, the chef that I worked with. Yeah. So I said, because I knew nothing about popcorn. And I said, Todd, I know I want a sweet, sort of a caramelly flavor. I know that. I know I want a cheesy flavor. And I know that I want something spicy. And those were sort of the parameters I gave him. He came back with all kinds of interesting flavors, some of them terrible. We sort of, you know, ended up, you know, through an iterative process, came up with our main flavors, which are pimento cheese, spicy barbecue, and sea salt caramel.
Fantastic stuff.
So, Kevin, I remember meeting you when I was a judge for the Business Person of the Year Awards, and you were a finalist for that. And one thing that stood out to me during the interview process was the name and the reason behind the name. Can you share that?
Sure. Yeah. So I went through a pretty lengthy process trying to figure out an interesting, cool name. Wanted something that was sort of connoted what I wanted to be with popcorn, and that's family, community. And so I named it after my kids, Caroline and Jack. So the first two letters of each of their names also means that sort of the double entendre, box in Spanish, which is important. So it was box popcorn. So I was able to sort of kill two birds with one stone, get for people who speak Spanish or know Spanish can see, oh, box popcorn, sort of that imagery in their mind, but also more importantly for me was the sort of the family, the, you know, community aspect of it. And people ask me all the time, by the way, why aren't you going into malls and like, what's your growth look like? And we could talk about that if you want, you know, later, but, you know, they say, go, gosh, what's the mall? Why aren't you going into a mall? I'm like, that's not to me community, nothing wrong with malls, nothing, you know, Lenox or Phipps or, you know, North Point or whatever mall. That's just not who I want to be. I want to be active in my community, and I want sort of popcorn to be thought of as something that is sort of communal and not just sort of a purchase process, but more of a, you know, sort of a community process that also, by the way, is great popcorn. You have to have great popcorn to start.
Hey, you're listening to The Shrimp Tank right here in Atlanta Business Radio X. We come to you live every week from 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks. I'm Ted Jenkin. We're sitting here with our guest today, my favorite popcorn popper, Kevin Peek of Kaja Popcorn, which I never knew that before about the box. It was really interesting stuff. You can always listen to replay, not only of this podcast, but all of them on shrimptankpodcast.com. I'm curious to know this question in here because I know that you're in a strip mall, and I don't know whether this is true or not, but when you get into this kind of business, and I know where you're located down in Peachtree Battle and probably one of the biggest, best malls in the entire city. I don't know how much sales they do in that mall, but it's unbelievable. But can you run a successful business as a small business owner out of one store, or do you need, mall or not, multiple stores to really exponentially be able to grow this kind of business?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think the answer is it depends, as with most answers. You know, if you want to be truly successful, I mean, there are some successful small business owners own, you know, the Shoeshine guy that's in our shopping center. Yeah, I mean, I know a lot of the different owners. Wu Cosmetics, they did open another store on the other side of town, but I tell you, it is unbelievable how much they sell in cosmetics. It is absolutely insane what they sell. People go in there and spend $1,000. Women will go in there and spend $1,000. I'm not even kidding you. So
no, I believe
Linda's
it.
Done a great job down there. So it depends on sort of what you're doing. In the sort of the retail world, I think of like sort of food. I think if you don't have multiple stores, it's kind of hard to make, you know, real money when you think of real wealth. But, you know, we're making money, and it's great for me. You know, I think if I'm going to be truly successful, it'll be multiple stores at some point. Or it may not be multiple stores. It may be that I do a warehouse. And because so much of our business is sort of large event, corporate stuff that doesn't have to be produced in the store, which is where we produce everything right now and package everything, it may be that I say, gosh, I'll keep retail, maybe have a few retail stores, but have the warehouse to be able to, because we still want to pop it fresh every day, but I could do that in a warehouse, ship it out every day, and still achieve our goal.
So a lot of our students will be listening to this, especially starting fall semester, as we collect the best practices of the best business owners. And one of the questions I guess I have to ask is what is the best business practice that you do that you could share with either an existing entrepreneur or an aspiring entrepreneur? Is there like a, is there something that you have learned that you do better than your competitors or better than others?
Yeah, I think it's, I think you always have to have a great product, right? So if you don't have a great product, you can only mask that so much. So I'll start with that. I mean, having a great product. So, you know, if I think about our competitors, you know, some of the people, and some of it's just a matter of opinion, but I don't think I guess it still is a matter of opinion, but I don't think there's much argument that our service and what we're trying to achieve when people come into our store or people call us on the telephone, it's not, yeah, what do you want? Or, you know, what can I get you? It's, you know, welcome to Kaja. You know, how are you? At some point in our conversation, if we haven't asked you how you're doing, we've failed, in my opinion. And so for me, I think a best business practice, but I think it also depends on what kind of business you want. You may want just high transaction, flip, and just sort of go to the next one. But in our society, people are just starved for community. And we're so, I think, driven by everything that we see electronically and all that. So for some of it, I can't even tell you, some of the people come in and we say, you know, how's your day so far? They look at us like we have seven heads. Like, literally, it's like, excuse me?
What? Just give me my popcorn.
No, and then, but then they're so, then they'll spend 20 minutes and the next thing you know, they're crying.
Have you ever seen anybody chow down a whole bag of popcorn in front of you in the store?
Absolutely. And I'm like, if they're willing to have this conversation with us and eat a whole bag of popcorn, I usually will give them more. Not really refill their bag, but definitely give them more. Not that I'm trying to, like, don't have 50 people coming in.
Buddy, you having a bad day? You chow down to that bag of popcorn in a big hurry.
They want to come in. People want to have that conversation. So for us, in our business, we have the ability to sort of have that conversation, have that. So for me, a best practice is really, it's figure out what you here to answer your question, Chris. Figure out what you want to be and really be that, because it's easy for us to, you know, from the very beginning, from my name at the very beginning of, you know, creating this entity, I knew I wanted to be community. And so if I lose that, you know, that's my business model sort of shot.
Well, how do you hold other people accountable to that? Because that could be an important value for you. But then when you're paying your people and when you're not there, how do you ensure that that's being carried out?
Yeah, that's the difference in why it's hard to find people for us. Our hiring process is very much sort of more the Chick-fil-A model and less the McDonald's model. McDonald's model is, I just need bodies here. I need someone who can push a button.
Yeah, right.
And Chick-fil-A, it's more...
hire the attitude and train the
butter
skill.
The popcorn, damn it.
Yeah. So we.
I said butter the popcorn. Damn it.
Hello, Ted. So we, it takes us a long time to hire. And we've hired some people in the past who we didn't, you know, it's, you know, they say hire fast or hire slow, fire fast. I don't believe, I don't fire fast. I give people a lot of chance and I work with them because I think people inherently want to do well. There's people who genuinely don't want to do well that I end up. Don't
before we get to our next round here, which is hot or not, and I want to get into it, I feel like the food business in general, it's the business that gets glamorized a lot. I think a lot of people think the bar business, the restaurant business, being in a business like yours, it's a very glamorous business. I'm wondering for students or kids that may be listening to this or other entrepreneurs, if you might share just a couple things about the what's not so glamorous about, you know, being in the food business. Because I think it's exciting for people, but they haven't always seen what's behind the curtain.
Yeah. Yeah. You think you're going to go in because you pay, you know, $25 for your entree or something. Oh my gosh, these restaurateurs must be making a killing. That's just not the case. It's a lot. I mean, it's a lot of long hours. You have to really watch your waste, your margins, all those things. I mean, it's just so interesting how much of that you don't really think about. Like if you think about, oh, that's a kernel of popcorn, oh, it fell on the floor, no big deal. It truly, that is kind of no big deal, but 500 of those start to add up, or 1,000 of those start to add up to real money. So yeah, it's not nearly as glamorous when your month of December is completely consumed by popcorn and you're waking up at 4 a.m. to go get popcorn popped so that by the time your team gets there at 7:30 or 8, they can be, you know, getting the first things bagged up and, you know, sort of get things going. So yeah, I mean, I know a lot of restaurateurs who they're, you know, in it for the love of it, but it's not nearly as glamorous or as profitable as you would think.
Hey, you're listening to The Shrimp Tank right here in Atlanta Business Radio X. We come to you live right now, 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. every Tuesday. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who is the founder and executive director of the SHORE, KSU Center of Entrepreneurship. Great stuff going on at KSU. It's really unbelievable. I had the benefit a few months ago of teaching a class to a bunch of students there. It was a lot of fun. The kids are really bright, so engaged in what's going on in that program. You'll continue to see that grow here in the state of Georgia and then eventually see it as a nationally recognized program. We're sitting here with our guest today, Kevin Peek, who's the owner of Kaja Popcorn. And now we get to our second round, which is our lightning round called Hot or Not. This is not where we have models come down the runway gallivanting your popcorn along the aisles. That's not what this is, although that would be kind of great to see that on the show.
Interesting concept.
Right. Especially at the short runway of a table here, it would be great to see it at this time of day. But that being said, it's not what the segment's about. We want to ask you a few questions in here, and I want to start off with a hot or not. That do you think it's a good idea for people in general to hire family members in their business?
I think it can be a good idea, just if they've got a similar mindset, they've got a similar drive and passion for the business. If you're hiring them out of duty or responsibility, or because they're slackers and can't get a job elsewhere, obviously that's not a good idea. And you see it all the time.
Phyllis, butter the popcorn.
You see it all the time. You see this first generation guy who just worked his tail off to be successful, and his sons or daughters or whatever family have been.
Oh, it's true.
And yeah, they run it into the ground. I mean, that's
absolutely,
you know, you
that's why only 2% of third generation businesses survive.
Yeah, yeah. It's they
is that true?
That is true, yeah. Ted. I would not lie to you.
Well, you might, but that's a pretty compelling.
Or that's a good thing about teaching. I could just make up anything, and people just assume that
I believe them.
You know, that's true because, exactly, because I'm looking so professorial when I say it.
You do. I would have believed it in a heartbeat if they said it was 31%.
That is a true stat. So it's actually pretty scary about how few, because of that reason, right? Mm-hmm. You know, because the first generation had to work their tail off. The second generation didn't have to. By the time it gets to grandchildren, I mean, their passion and their interest in the business versus feeling entitled to it, you know, it has its effect.
Yeah. And they've got the money. They see the money in front of them. They're sitting on loads of money. And that's why you see a lot of businesses. It's better to sort of sell it out and let somebody else come in and run it who really wants to run it, as opposed to the kids who just want to milk it.
Yep. All right. Hot or not, business plan or not?
I'd say a business plan is a nice guide. It's a nice idea. It makes you think about a lot of things you might not otherwise think about. But I'd say that it's truly just a starting point, right? It's sort of think about, hey, here are some of these expenses that I might not have otherwise, you know, sort of thought about. And as you really build out a plan, you can say, how many widgets do I have to sell today to cover this expense? And I guarantee you people, they flip that. They always get it wrong. They always underestimate their expenses and overestimate their revenues.
Oh, absolutely.
And I think it's sort of natural because you sort of think, yeah, I can sell X, you know, amount of widgets, you know, but if you've really built a good business plan, and I actually paid money to have somebody help me build a business plan. And he was, you know, really good at it. And he'd done it with a lot of other entrepreneurs. There were a lot of things in that I'm like, holy cow, I would not have thought of that.
Yeah, because passion creates blind spots, right? So you're passionate about your thing. And, you know, entrepreneurs, we're optimists. You don't say that, hey, I'm going to start this venture, but it'll probably fail. You know, so we tend to look at things optimistically. So that tendency to overestimate revenue and underestimate expense is going to be a strong thing. So having outside eyes can be a valuable thing.
It's the irrational exuberance. That's the worst thing. It's in business in general, you know, and it does happen to business owners all the time.
Yeah.
And people that buy real estate or even other investments, they always think they're going to make more than they really are.
Yeah.
Usually. So one of the questions that I have in here is a hot or not. This, I'm going to give you a little different hot or not today, is that let's just say you have a client that's buying tins from you. And they're asking for all sorts of special stuff. I mean, is it hot or not to fire a client if they're too much of a pain in the you know what?
Yeah, I don't know if it's too much of a pain to fire them. And I hope you're not trying to sort of start asking for different flavors for the referral gifts.
I was just asking when that. Lee asked for all these custom labels and stuff like that. You know, the customers ask for too much.
Yeah.
Do you just have to let them go sometimes? Just, you know, let them cut them loose.
I don't know if you necessarily cut them loose, but I think you give them, make it less pleasurable for them to do business with you, to the extent that they're either going to decide, do I really want this or don't they?
Right.
So, you know, for us, we've had clients who we started working with and, you know, offered to just, you know, say, I don't know, X price. And then they come back and say, oh, but now I want. And it just became, you know, for me, it became so much effort for us that it just wasn't worth it. And so I just stopped giving. The next thing they asked for, I said, we can't do that. Or it's going to cost you X. The real cost was X, but I told them it was X plus like 25%. Right, which I didn't really need at 25%.
Well, you priced yourself out of the market, right? You just priced them out of the customer.
Or
there's a premium for pain in the butt.
Exactly.
Customers, right?
Right.
And so, you're going to make them. That's your pain in the butt premium.
Yeah, exactly.
Is that a thing? PIBP?
So you don't really want to lose
customers. Another hashtag we can add to this here.
I hope at some point I'm big enough that I could say, hey, I want to drop a client. Right now, I don't feel that I want to drop a client. What I want to do is say, hey, it has to make sense for us to keep this partnership going, because right now it feels like it's not really a partnership.
Wouldn't that be great, Chris, if he made a Seinfeld episode and he became like that popcorn? No popcorn for you.
Yeah, exactly.
No popcorn for you.
That's right. Yeah. The popcorn
sends him right out the door. Be fantastic.
But you also never know where people are coming from. So I've learned is you don't know had a bad day and they come in and some people are kind of rude or whatever. And I have to, I have to say, you know what? I'm not really sure what that was, but hopefully that popcorn will make them feel better.
Right.
And maybe not. Maybe those.
All right, Chris, let's do one more hot or not.
Hot or not, taking on equity partners.
I'm going to have to give the answer. It depends. I think that having that, there's something nice about having people who are interested enough in your business to want to give you money. And I think that the depends part is, it depends on what they're asking for in return. And is it, do they just want the ROI? And that's kind of that's something to be nice about having that. I've got to, I want to help my business partners achieve that ROI. But if they also want to start meddling in the business, I think that can be a real struggle because they may have short-term decisions, financial reasons why they want to make decisions that may be counter to your long-term interest. So I think it can be really challenging if you haven't set that up well. And I actually set it up. I do have some partners, investment partners, but it looks much more structured. It's structured much more like a loan. Has a little bit more than just a return on it, but they don't have any say in the business. But they actually want me to succeed. And that's the nice thing about having investment partners is that they want to help you succeed in business.
Hey, you're listening to the Shrimp Tank right here in Atlanta Business Radio X. If you've never been out of the studios down here in Sandy Spring, you ought to check it out. If you ever thought about doing a radio show, there's no more better fun place to do it than the place that we're in today. I'm sitting here with my co-host, Chris Hanks, who is the founder and executive director at the Shore Center for Entrepreneurship at KSU, blowing up right now with kids that are becoming entrepreneurs. Fantastic stuff going on. And I have every bit of confidence that over the next 10, 20, 30 years, like Chris mentioned at the beginning of this show, he said somewhere in the nature of 40% of Gen Y people will be self-employed. And I bet they suspect that number will grow, that people will not want to work for corporate America, that they want to take their destiny in their own hands. And it's what will make our country great again, having more people build those businesses and create more jobs. You can always catch a replay of not only our first couple of segments with Kevin, but of every show on shrimptankpodcast.com. There's also some tremendous articles on there. You can follow us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, and learn more about becoming a successful entrepreneur. So this should be your one-stop shop to get all this information on what you should do when you run your business. We're sitting here with our guest today, Kevin Peek, who's the owner of Kaja Popcorn. And now it's time for our favorite lightning round. This is the part where you think that Professor Chris Hanks had a tough face on when he just quoted statistics. Wait till he asks you a question when you're in the chair for the plead the fifth question. So Kevin gets a chance to plead the fifth at least one time.
Yeah, we've had some people do it and some people not.
Some people so, not.
Let's see.
So you want to kick this off or what?
Right, I will kick this off because there's a question I'm curious about because I believe that entrepreneurs pay a psychological price to be an entrepreneur. And I'm just curious, what part of business ownership has turned you into a person that you don't like?
We're not talking about the bottle now. So this,
I think the nervousness that I have about succeeding and whether or not that's made me think more about sort of other businesses and a little bit, maybe a little bit more jaded about business in general and seeing small businesses. And every time I drive by a store or a shop or something, I'm like, I wonder how they're making money and I wonder what they're doing. And sort of thinking that and maybe thinking more about the economics of it instead of maybe the love of it.
Makes sense. For those of you who don't know, Kevin was a graduate of Georgetown, one of the finest universities in the United States. But here's the dilemma. Uh-oh. Your son gets into Georgetown. Your daughter gets into Georgetown. By the time they get there, let's just say it's $100,000 a year at the rate that it's going today. And you have a choice. You can say $400,000 over 4 years, let's go to Georgetown, or you give them $400,000 to start a new business and let them ride with it. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I'd say if they have a sound business idea, I would say I'm okay. I don't think college is for everyone.
And
I don't think Georgetown necessarily is for everyone. I think I love learning. I love what I got out of Georgetown. I love the experience. I love being from a small town in Arkansas to be able to meet people from all over the world, all over the country was amazing. I think that we as a society put so much weight on college as the be all end all. And then they get out in this funnel. And now we have all these kids who are going to, I don't want to name any names. I don't want to offend anybody, going to these colleges and they're coming out with $50,000 in debt. And they're wondering, why do I have debt? Why don't I have this amazing job that's paying this off? Well, because you're an English major at Podunk U. And the job market just isn't there for that. So I think that having my kids just go to Georgetown for the sake of going to Georgetown, if they've got a sound business idea that I think I can get behind, that I think they're passionate about, absolutely.
I like it.
Nice. Where would you say your company is most vulnerable?
Most vulnerable. I think it's staffing. I think that's our biggest vulnerability is being able to maintain, retain, and expand with the right mentality. Because I think from a product standpoint, I think we've got it right. Our model, not to say that we're the only popcorn company in the world that does what we're doing, but I think that the combination of making it fresh every day, awesome flavors, working with chefs to continue. So every flavor that we come up with, we have a few standing sort of monthly flavors in the fall season. But for the most part, we work with chefs to create our flavors. And they've actually turned in a little competition among themselves create really, really cool flavors. So right now we've got an East Carolina barbecue, which there's some in this tin that I brought for y'all today. So I think from a popcorn standpoint, we're doing great. Community standpoint, we're doing great. But if we don't maintain that environment of respect and consumer service, customer service, I think that really is a big vulnerability for us.
What's the worst flavor you ever created?
I didn't create it, so it's I'm always careful. Throw this back off. We actually came up with a spicy Japanese flavor.
Oh.
Not only did it smell
like a wasabi
so bad,
popcorn,
it had wasabi. Oh. It had some sort of fish oil.
Wow.
It had some other thing. It was, and the chef is an amazing guy. I don't want to name names, but really great guy. Super, super great chef. Food, very an awesome restaurant. One of the best restaurants in town, quite honestly, still. And he created this. And again, I think chefs sometimes just want to see like how far out can they go.
Right. Well, because popcorn is big on a lot of appetizer menus today.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. They do it. Yeah.
Popcorn is an appetizer.
So, for example, and then contra to that, a flavor that I thought was going to be just really a bomb was we created a watermelon jalapeno, and people still ask about it 2 years later.
What?
Can we make that for them again? It was so amazing.
Watermelon jalapeno.
When the
popcorn.
Chef told me that, I was like, wow, I'm this is going to be a bomb.
I didn't even know that was legal. That technology existed.
Yeah.
Watermelon and jalapeno. Wow.
Amazing. Yeah.
Wow. So if I went and interviewed your employees, what's the one leadership trait they would say that you need to work on?
It's a good question. I think they would probably say I need to be, interestingly, I think if they were honest, they'd say that I need to be more forceful with them and probably have sort of stand my ground more with them. Because again, same thing I'm with customers. I'm like, yeah, I'm not sure where they're coming from. I'm not sure if they're having a bad day.
Yeah, right,
but
right.
But I'm probably a little inconsistent in... I don't want to say reprimanding, but in sort of enforcing the rules.
Right.
So I might say have a rule with like, no cell phone usage while you're at work. And I kind of want that. But then I'm also like, I understand if my manager's got kids and they need to call her, I'm like, am I going to be the guy's like, no, you can't take that call from your kids because I said no
right,
cell phone.
Right.
So I have rules, but I also have rules that are sort of, broadly speaking rules, but I probably don't enforce them enough.
Yeah.
Or enforce them consistently enough across my employee base. And that's hard as a business owner. You have to balance good people. So, right, if I have a good person and they break the rules a little bit, I'm probably going to let them bend. If I have somebody who probably I don't feel like is so much in it for my best interest, I might be a little harsher with them on the rules.
Yeah.
That may not be fair.
Well, you can catch an entire replay of this podcast on shrimptankpodcast.com. And so, Kevin, for those folks that were listening today, I know you sort of have two businesses. You have the corporate route and a lot of things you do with businesses and corporations, whether it's gifts or holiday time, and then also the store itself. How can people get in touch with you either way to learn more about buying some of your delicious popcorn?
Yeah, they can get a sense of who we are and what we do at kajapopcorn.com, CAJAPopcorn.com, or they can give us a call at our store, 404-846-2156. Obviously, they can always stop by the store at Peachtree Battle Shopping Center in Atlanta.
Well, this is fabulous information today. Chris, I've got an idea for one of your classes. We're going to have to flesh this out. I was thinking about it on the show today. What about a mobile OBGYN business? Would that work?
Wow.
So put that in the ticker for the next couple shows on
right.
there. Next week's guest that we're going to bring on, it's not Shaquille O'Neal. It's Shaquille Wiggins. We wanted to get Shaquille O'Neal, but instead we got Shaquille Wiggins, who's going to come on and talk about Strictly Business Entertainment. He's a very young but successful business owner. Thanks, as always, for listening to The Shrimp Tank, and check out our replays on shrimptankpodcast.com. We'll talk to you next week.
I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.